And welcome back to the program. I hope you heard that interview with Dr. Jeffrey Sachs. He is an economist and the director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University in New York. He has been talking about the expected worldwide economic costs, the impact of climate change, for as long as I've been reporting on this stuff, so going back at least a decade, and really exciting to finally get a chance to talk to him directly. You can hear his frustration because of the lack of progress on the, political front, with the scientific evidence just mounting and the anecdotal evidence, tragically, right in front of our faces on television, with the scenes from the Philippines, the scenes from the Midwestern set of tornadoes that touched down in the Peoria, Illinois, Washington, Illinois area. People who said they never thought this would happen to them, they've seen it on TV, can't believe it did, but it wiped out their homes, their streets, their communities. It looks like some of the parts of the East Coast that were hammered by Hurricane Sandy. So even Dr. Sachs said we cannot tie any one weather event to climate change. Just take a look. As Jane Velez Mitchell said on her program on HLN yesterday, just look at it. Our eyes do not deceive. So forget the deniosaurs and the skeptics who are saying hasn't been proven, and then add a ton of garbage behind that that doesn't make sense. It's sort of circular talk and gobbledygook. Just take a look and look what Americans and other humans across the planet are dealing with, and let's have some compassion. Let's say, whether or not we care about the weather will determine what we do next. We certainly should. And what we're going to do next is go to Sean McElwee. I hope I pronounced that correctly, Sean. Sean is a writer and researcher of public policy. Most recently, a week ago, did a great article for Salon, and D.R. Tucker read it and said, let's get him on. So thanks for taking time to join us today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad to have a show.
We talk a lot about what's up with the Republicans. Why can't they, smell the carbon, see the reality? We know part of it is that, there's too much funding coming in from the fossil fuel industry, the Koch brothers, to make sure we continue with the status quo. But, I mean, it's a losing battle. They're on the wrong side of history. They can't continue to stand up there like James Inhofe does and so many of them, and ask us to, vote for them and give them any kind of leadership position when they are completely flying in the face of scientific facts. And you made a really good couple of points about how we can prove definitively that, there's a difference between the Democratic and Republican Party in terms of being, pro or anti-science. It even sounds ridiculous to say pro or anti-science, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, most scientists don't really want to get involved in political issues. I mean, Michael Mann just wanted to be a scientist, do his research. It's really the Republicans are getting so insanely crazy that scientists are having to take a position because, I mean, look at the most recent thing the Republicans did for the U.S. National Science Foundation. They said that all of the research has to be in the national interest. So they're cutting down on the amount of science research that can happen, and they're installing any legislation at all on climate change. It's going to be almost impossible to get anything done. Obama's going to have to do what he's doing right now, which is use the regulatory power of the EPA if he wants to have any sort of legacy on environmental issues.
And, of course, with all the time spent and, bandwidth, devoted to the health care problem in his first term and now with the problems from the health care Obamacare program, those of us who have been waiting patiently and very impatiently and quietly and not so quietly for him to get around to climate change, really taking it on and bringing it, to the legislature, we're going, oh, my God, it's never going to happen.
And it's especially tough now because when you have an economy that's as bad as this and you have unemployment, as high as unemployment is, and you have these temporary jobs, you have these bad jobs, it's really tough to put forward a plan that is long-term. It's going to be good, but in the short term is going to require some sacrifice, and it's going to require a lot of the national budget. And it may temporarily harm economic growth, but people don't want to hear about these trade-offs. They don't want to hear about what's right when they're out of a job. And another issue I think that doesn't really get talked about a lot, and it's something I actually work as a research assistant at Demos, it's that GDP, the way that we measure economic growth, implicitly makes policymakers slow to to actually make these long-term investments, because GEP doesn't take into account long-term exploitation and degradation of resources. So look at before the financial crisis. You've got growth in GDP that's entirely unsustainable, but the incentive is on the policymakers to let the growth keep going on, because the GDP doesn't properly give you an accurate picture of what's actually happening with the economy and what's actually happening with the environment.
Exactly. It factors in the social ills. Most people are not aware of that, and it's one of the problems we face. Sean, do you think that those representatives in Congress who, you know, mock scientists and call it the biggest hoax, do you think they really believe what they're saying? Is that possible, or are they just, you know, getting paid to pad their pockets and they can actually clearly be bought? You know, I've often wondered, which is it? Are they really that stupid, that cynical, that ideological? What's your sense?
I like the Richard Hofstadter hypothesis here, right? He wrote the book Anti-Intellectualism in American Life. And there's been a long history and a storied history in America of this strange democratic kind of egalitarian spite of experts, right? David H. Friedman wrote a book called Wrong, Why the Experts Get Things Wrong. And people don't want to be told what to do by experts, and they want to be able to understand what's going on, which is why in the United States you have weird quack healthcare remedies that crop up that are incredibly successful. And you have people who will just deny to your face what 97% of scientists, what the scientists believe. What's happening though is these sorts of anti-intellectual sentiment. I think some big corporations finally realize that this is something that they can use to push forward their policy agenda. So people like on Fox News, they always talk about how the intellectuals are running the country, and the Koch brothers pump out this research, and it's really hard for the facts to come out with all this hype and astroturfing.
And Koch brothers, we talk about them a lot on this show, but really, aren't they rich enough that they're so greedy that they're going to just sell their own children down the river, and not to mention everybody else's? I mean, they are relentless at this and doing a lot of evil deeds in a lot of areas of our society, you know, anti-progress for sure. But this one area is irreversible, and it is urgent, and it is critically important, and it is causing human suffering as we speak, or contributing to it, adding to it. Climate change. What do you think of them? I mean, how do they get away with this? Well, money. But why? What motivates them? They have more money than God.
I just saw the Warsaw. A lot of the poorer countries walked out of the Warsaw because the Warsaw Climate Accords, because they wanted reparations, which they should have. It's the Western world, the industrialized world, eats a donut, and they're the ones who get fat. We use the carbon dioxide and we pollute, and then Lake Chad drives up. It's not fair at all. And it used to be like Goldman Sachs used to have the motto, long-term greedy. And more in our economy, if you just look at the financial crisis, these hedge fund managers didn't care what was happening 2 or 3 years down the road. It's all about the next, you know, quarterly report. It's all about the bonus at the end of the year. You have this profound short-termism in the economy that's really astounding for anyone who's sitting outside of this. And there are some CEOs and there are some hedge fund managers. Like, I know Tom Steyer has given a lot of money to these types of causes. And it would be great if more billionaires and more corporations were willing to take a stand and say, no, this is not good for us in the future. Climate change is going to wreak havoc on the economy. And we need, and it's in our business interest to start dealing with that right now.
Hear, hear. And it would be even better if Tom Steyer and a few other progressive billionaires would put some money behind independent green media, and maybe we could get word out to more Americans and not just the wonderful progressive crowd, because I do think media has a role here, and I think they've completely missed the boat when it comes to it. And part of the reason, because I talk to some programmers and find out what their reasons are for not taking a chance on a program that, you know, and maybe calling it green is problematic. Let's just call it, you know, our life support system is under major stress, and we are partly the cause, and we don't quite understand that yet. We need to, you know, get people to understand that there's a lot we can do or not, but we have that choice, and this is a moment to make that choice. They say it's too political, it's advocacy, and that's the real tragedy here. It's been politicized, it's been co-opted by, you know, the special interests, and so media gatekeepers don't want to touch it. And meantime, you know, we don't have any programming that really seriously addresses these issues other than, you know, the internet progressive green outlets, but of course it's hard to get the mainstream to tune into that.
And one of the biggest reasons that I wrote my article was because of exactly what you're talking about. It's a false equivalence. It appears that at CBS they honestly believe that if they're going to do a bid on climate change, they have to have a pro-climate change and an anti-climate change science. And that's absurd. If you were doing something on astrology, you don't have to have someone who believes in it and doesn't believe in it, or flat earth. You don't have to have a flat earther. Come on. And it's actually just as absurd to have a corporate hack come on and say absolute untruths about climate change, but there's this false balance.
Exactly,
that's
the
one
debate.
Of the most frustrating things in the media today.
Perpetuating that there's a debate, and it's annoying, it's absurd, but it's also very serious consequences. I mean, that's the irony, right? That they won't touch this. They'll have all this, you know, faux controversies on that aren't really important, and lots of programming that really is so, let's face it, asinine. And yet I have tried, and I have gotten, you know, no, can't do that. No, what do you mean? No, we could never. It's been just, you know, marginalized, it being our environment and our stewardship or lack thereof of it, especially in this country. So who can blame them for walking out in Warsaw? Who can blame the Philippine envoy for staging a hunger strike? And I don't know if it's continuing, but, you know, what strength, what courage, and how arrogant of us in the United States to stand by and ignore that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was just recently that report that came out of these talks, and the three, I think it was the three economists who were behind it, they listed the countries in terms of progress, and the first three slots were blank, because they said we couldn't assign a first, second, and third place country because no country has done anywhere near enough to start fighting climate change. And it's an issue that every country has to get behind. And it's a shame because developed countries keep insisting that developing countries are like, oh, well, developing countries need to do more. No, it needs to be on the onus of the developed countries to start on this issue. And
doesn't
shame
that
is,
argue,
yeah.
John, just started sounding pretty childish. Come on, you know, you first. No, you first. I'm not going to put my marbles into you, put your marbles in. Meantime, you know, as the planet melts, as the storms kill, you know, I mean, leveling whole communities. And last thing I ever thought I'd be doing is quoting Jane Velez Mitchell on the urgency of climate change, but she did a fabulous segment called Unleashed yesterday. And I learned from her that the Philippines is number 41 in terms of countries' emissions, and of course we're right up there with China. And as she pointed out quite poignantly, it hadn't occurred to me, China has, you know, surpassed us not per capita but overall emissions contributed to the atmosphere. But those emissions in large part are being spewed from factories making products that we buy in America. So you know, we've seen the enemy is us. The good news is that only we can do something about it. The bad news is we don't seem to be taking it seriously yet in any kind of real widespread, you know, wide and deep way in this country.
Mm-hmm. And the longer we wait, the harder it's going to be to take this sort of action. I mean, I believe this is the Stern report that was I read when I was in middle school. I was looking at that, and he was arguing we need to take action right now, otherwise it's going to cost a lot more as a percentage of GDP to solve these problems.
Nicholas Stern, out of England, talking about the cost. Well, that's it. When we just had Jeffrey Sachs on, he's an economist. He's an angry economist because of what we're, you know, doing to our economy, our environment. It's, you know, that's the problem. This thing has been sort of segmentized or, you know, compartmentalized as an environmental issue when it affects health, economy, security, everything.
Absolutely. Definitely. And I, one of the things that I think is a very big part of that is exactly what we're doing here at Demos with reimagining the way that we perceive growth and the way that we measure growth. There's a genuine progress index out there, and it takes into account things like water pollution, air pollution, noise pollution, leisure time, the amount of people in higher education, the cost of commuting, all of these 26 social, environmental, and economic indicators. And if you look at that compared to GDP, the genuine progress indicator has been flat since 1950, while GDP has grown. Because the truth is that for the last 50 years, our growth has come at the expense of the environment. It has not been equal. It's left large portions of our society behind. It hasn't been genuine growth for the vast majority of Americans. And all of this comes back to in World War II, we had the gross domestic product, and that all of a sudden became this sacrosanct number that we had to make sure stayed above 3%.
And since we're venting and I'm repeating my pet peeves, don't you love it when I hear people say, you know, whether it's in media or just public officials or just even friends, yeah, well, you know, I'm doing it because it's good for the environment, as if it's altruistic, which, of course, yes, it is. But it's in our self-interest. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an option that some people who care to can do as a luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually wrote an article a while back called "Environmentalism as a Humanism," because a lot of people on the right have been like, "Oh, environmentalists are like almost religious in their devotion to the environment, like worshiping Mother Earth." Something I said.
Oh, yes. Earthers and our fervor for the planet.
Yeah, there's that great George Carlin bit where he says the Earth doesn't care if we all die off. The reason we're worried about environmental damage is because it hurts our children's prospect. It hurts our prospect, and it hurts other human beings who have to inhabit the Earth with us. That's what we're worried about, not some like nebulous concept of the environment. It's other human beings that we're affecting, and that's the biggest thing that we need to get across. And that's what's so hard about climate change is it's not a really simple mechanism that people can just instantly grasp.
Exactly. And that's why we need more programming, because it is complex. It is, you know, there's more than climate change. That one, of course, makes all the other issues worse. But so many environmental challenges, such time urgency and complexity. And so why is there no dedicated programming anywhere in America on commercial broadcast? It just blows my mind. And I repeat that every week, and I will until we get some, and would love to be part of it. But even if not, somebody ought to do it. And it's just crazy, because every day we don't have that kind of programming on is a day wasted.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, imagine if the sort of money and advocacy that's right now going to combat the future problem of the federal debt, which is, in my opinion, not that huge problem. But imagine
what about the ecological debt? What about the climate cliff?
What if we had the same amount of people who were talking about climate change, if it was op-eds in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times every day and CNN and MSNBC every day? People would have to start taking notice. But the fact is I mean, I cannot remember the last time that I watched network news and I saw a bit, a segment on climate change.
Exactly. And that's partly because they are funded. You know, a lot of the commercials are oil, gas, coal, especially during the election, like every other commercial was. And that's just got to change. And we're trying to change it right now, because CNN is doing such a fabulous job. You know, Anderson Cooper's been in the Philippines, really bringing home these human suffering. The stories are just heartbreaking. And I don't know how anyone in America can watch that, let alone around the world, and not be moved by it. And all they need to do is go a little bit further and say, so what's causing all these record storms? Could it be that, you know, climate change is contributing to them, making them worse, not creating them, but contributing to them? That's what needs to happen next. And thanks so much, Sean. And where can listeners go for more on your work?
Well, I'm writing for Salon. I also write a Demos Policy Shop blog, and I have my own blog at SeanAMackley.com. Totally advertising free, so I'd encourage your followers to donate. And I think maybe your problem is you need to get Rob Ford, that Toronto crackster mayor, to get behind climate change. Then maybe you'll get the media to listen
exactly.
to your...
Exactly. He's out of control. George Zimmerman's out of control. No, people. We have a climate out of control. Thanks so much,
Sean. Yeah, get the media on the cause. Yep.
Thank you.